If you learn a new tech skill in 2026, you generally expect a pretty neat, predictable salary bracket, right? Like you search for a specific language or a framework, and the market data spits out this nice, clean average.
Right, it's usually super straightforward.
Exactly. It's just comforting. But today we are looking at the data for this automation framework called Playwright, and I gotta say, the numbers are just completely
Oh,
broken.
totally broken, yeah.
Like you can have two engineers, right? With the exact same years of experience, the exact same Playwright certificate on their resume, and they are seeing a salary gap of over 15 lakhs. I
Wild.
mean, I'm looking at entry-level roles starting around 4 LPA, that's lakhs per annum for those listening, and then similar experience levels are just rocketing all the way up to 40 LPA or more.
Yeah, it really is a staggering spread when you first look at it.
So today we're diving into exactly why that massive gap exists and, how you make sure you are the one sitting on the higher end of it. Welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me. And you know what's fascinating here is that the confusion actually stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of what the tech market is buying in 2026.
Oh, how
Well,
so?
Playwright itself isn't a job title. I think a lot of people get that twisted. It's just a modern browser automation and testing framework.
Right.
So companies aren't posting jobs looking for a quote-unquote Playwright. They are using Playwright as like one of many tools to achieve a much larger engineering goal, which is basically shipping software faster without breaking things.
Okay, that reframes things completely. So
Right.
searching for a Playwright salary is kind of like looking for a hammer salary, when what you really want to know is what a master carpenter makes.
Yes, that's the perfect mental model for this.
Because the tool doesn't dictate the pay, right? It's what you can build with the tool. Like, if you only know how to swing the hammer, your value is incredibly limited. But if you can build a custom house, the hammer is just, an extension of your expertise.
Exactly. And if we look at what companies are actually hiring for, like the actual job titles attached to these big pay scales, they're looking for QA automation engineers, SDETs.
Which is software development engineer and test,
Spot on. Yeah, SDETs and test automation architects. Those are the roles commanding the really big numbers, not just Playwright tester.
So let's break down the actual experience tiers we're seeing in these 2026 planning ranges, because this data is fascinating.
Let's do it.
So for freshers, 0 to 2 years of experience, the practical planning range sits between 4 to 8 LPA.
Right.
Then when you move up to mid-level, which is like 2 to 5 years, it shifts to 8 to 15 LPA.
Yeah, pretty standard jump.
And then senior engineers in that 5 to 8 year pocket, they're hitting 15 to 25 LPA. And finally, your architects and leads with 8+ years are sitting in that 25 to 40 plus LPA bracket.
They are. Though I will throw a major caution flag on those numbers real quick.
Ooh, why is that?
Because looking at single source salary websites can be incredibly misleading. Like Glassdoor, for instance, might show around 95,000 a month based on a tiny self-reported sample size for Playwright searches.
Oh, right, because people have to voluntarily put that data in.
Exactly. And then Jubal reports an India-wide average of about 6.34 lakh per year.
That's a huge difference.
Right. So these numbers are just evidence of what's out there. They are not promises. The actual offer you get depends entirely on how the hiring manager classifies your capability during the interview.
Which honestly brings up a really pointed question. Let's say I am a fresher. I go out, I take a boot camp, and I just memorize all the basic Playwright syntax. Like,
Okay.
I know exactly how to write page.click and page.fill to make a browser do things.
Yep, the basics.
Does that raw knowledge guarantee me the top end of that 8 euro LPA fresher bracket?
No, it absolutely does not.
Wait, really? Not even close.
Not even close. Because in the capability framework we are looking at, simply memorizing commands and writing linear scripts that just makes you a level one professional.
Oh, level one.
Yeah, you are what the industry calls a script writer. You can create basic tests, which, it has some value, but it is strictly entry-level value.
Why is that ceiling so low, though? Like, I mean, if I'm automating a process, aren't I saving the company time? I'm essentially taking manual testing and just typing it out so the computer does it. That has to be worth something.
Well, sure, you are saving them execution time, but you are likely costing them massive amounts of maintenance time.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Because a level one script writer tends to write very brittle code. The moment a developer changes, like the color of a button or moves a menu bar, your test breaks.
And then you have to go back in and rewrite it.
Exactly. You have to spend hours fixing the test. So to reach the higher tiers, that 10 to a 15 LPA range, you have to transition into a level two automation engineer.
Okay, what does that mean practically?
It means building reusable tests and maintaining reliable suites. And then, you know, to push into the architect level, you have to hit level 3, which is the framework engineer.
Okay, so if knowing the syntax is just the baseline, what exactly pushes someone from 10 LPA up to 20 LPA or more? Like, I want to get into the specific mechanics here. What are the actual tech stack multipliers?
Right, the real money makers. So the first, and arguably the most critical, is programming depth.
Okay.
Playwright supports several languages, but JavaScript, and specifically TypeScript, are the absolute heavy hitters right now. In fact, Playwright's own core documentation highly recommends TypeScript because it adds static type checking.
Okay, stop right there, because I think a lot of people hear static type checking and their eyes just completely glaze over.
Yeah, it sounds super academic.
Right. For someone trying to scale their skills and their salary, why does a company actually care if you use TypeScript over standard JavaScript? Like, what is the business value?
Okay, think of standard JavaScript as writing a very fast email without a spell checker. You can write it quickly, sure, but you won't know you made a catastrophic typo until after you hit send and, you know, embarrass yourself.
Oh, man, we've all been there.
Right. So in software, that means you don't find the bug until the code actually runs. TypeScript, on the other hand, is the spell checker.
Oh, I see.
It forces you to define exactly what kind of data you are working with. So if you try to pass text into a field that specifically requires a number, TypeScript throws an error immediately while you were typing it.
Wow.
Yeah, it catches the bugs before the code is even compiled.
So it saves the company a massive headache because you're catching errors locally right there on your screen rather than pushing broken tests into the main code base.
Exactly. It's about having an engineering mindset.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
So what's the next multiplier?
Framework architecture. And the cornerstone of that is understanding the page object model, or POM, along with custom fixtures.
Okay, let's clarify the page object model, because that acronym, POM, gets thrown around in almost every job description I've seen. Why is POM the secret sauce for jumping up a salary bracket?
Because it solves the maintenance nightmare we just talked about a minute ago.
The brittle code.
Yes. Imagine you have 50 different test scripts that all require logging into an application.
Yep.
A level 1 script writer will write the instructions like, find the username box, type username, click login. They'll write that 50 separate times across 50 separate files.
Which means if the developers change the ID of the login button...
Exactly. You have to open 50 files and fix it 50 times. It takes all week.
That sounds miserable.
It is.
Yeah.
But with the page object model, you act like an engineer. You create one central page object file for the login screen. You write the button logic once. Then your 50 tests just point to that one file.
Oh, wow.
So when the button changes, you update it in one single place, and all 50 tests magically work again.
That saves a company hundreds of hours of maintenance.
Exactly. And that level of efficiency is what they pay top dollar for.
That is brilliant. And about building a system, not just writing a one-off script. Now, here is where it gets really interesting to me, because modern QA isn't just about clicking buttons on a screen anymore. The data heavily emphasizes API testing as a massive salary multiplier.
Oh, absolutely.
But why is validating the API so crucial when the end user only interacts with the visual UI? Like, they just see the buttons and the pictures.
Well, because the user interface is just a thin layer of paint over the engine.
Yeah. Right.
And UI testing is notoriously slow. It's prone to random failures. If you want to validate that a banking application actually transferred money, you don't just want to check if a green success message popped up on the screen.
Because the UI could be wrong.
Exactly. The message could say success, but the database didn't actually do anything.
Right.
So you want to test the backend service, the REST APIs, the HTTP methods, the JSON payloads.
Straight to the source.
Yes. You want to verify the database actually registered the transfer. A candidate who can validate the UI and instantly hit the API to verify the backend logic. I mean, they're offering vastly more coverage than someone who just automates mouse clicks.
Okay, so once you build all of this, right, you've got the TypeScript, the page object model, the API tests, where does it actually live? Because that brings us to CI/CD, continuous integration and continuous deployment.
This is it. This is the ultimate separator between a tester and an engineer.
Hmm.
Companies do not want tests that only live on your laptop.
Right, because if your laptop is closed...
The tests aren't running. They need these test suites to run automatically in the cloud every single time a developer tries to merge new code.
So running tests on your own laptop is kind of like proofreading your own essay.
Yeah.
But CI/CD in the cloud is like having a panel of ruthless automated editors check every single line of code the moment a developer submits it, before it ever goes to production.
That's a really great way to put it, yeah. If you know how to build a pipeline in GitHub Actions or Jenkins to make that automation happen, your value just skyrockets.
It's a game changer.
And when you combine that pipeline knowledge with advanced debugging, using things like the Playwright Inspector and Trace Viewer to investigate exactly why a test failed in the cloud, you become indispensable.
So bringing it back to our earlier thought, learning basic Playwright syntax is like learning to drive the car. But learning CI/CD, API validation, and framework architecture, that is like learning how to build, maintain, and upgrade the engine. You aren't just a driver anymore. You're the chief mechanic.
Yes. And this leads perfectly into what the industry calls engineering ownership.
Engineering ownership. Okay.
By the time you hit that 5 to 8 year mark in your career, the differentiator between a 15 LPA offer and a 25 LPA offer is no longer your basic knowledge of Playwright.
It's what you do with it.
Yes. It's how you own the quality process. It's your ability to define quality metrics for the whole team. It's your ability to identify flaky tests that fail randomly, isolate them, and fix them so the developers actually trust the test suite again.
You're leading the charge.
Right. It's mentoring junior engineers. You are owning the entire quality strategy of the product, not just managing a folder full of scripts.
I have to challenge something here, though.
Okay, go for it.
With all these complex requirements, APIs, CI/CD, TypeScript, it makes me wonder about the tools themselves. Mm. Playwright is this shiny, fast, modern framework. But the industry standard for, what, a decade has been Selenium?
Oh, easily a decade.
Right. So if Playwright is so much better and natively supports all these modern features, wouldn't a company pay a massive premium to hire someone just to migrate them away from clunky old Selenium? Like, doesn't knowing Playwright automatically mean you out-earn a Selenium user?
You would think so logically.
Yeah.
But that is a massive industry miss.
Wait, really?
Oh, yeah. Enterprise inertia is incredibly powerful. The idea that Playwright equals a higher salary and Selenium equals a lower salary is completely false.
That's surprising.
I mean, Selenium still has an absolute stranglehold on the enterprise market. Huge corporations have millions of legacy tests built in Selenium. Migrating away from that costs millions of dollars.
So the name of the tool on your resume doesn't dictate your salary ceiling at all?
No. The tool gets you the interview. The depth of your automation responsibility gets you the salary.
Ah, okay.
Let's look at a scenario of how hiring managers actually evaluate this. Consider candidate A and candidate B.
All right, lay it on me.
Candidate A has 3 years of experience. They went out and got a Playwright certification, but they only know how to write basic linear scripts. They have very limited API knowledge, and they don't have a public GitHub repository showing their work.
Okay, pretty standard entry-level stuff. And candidate B?
Candidate B only has 2.5 years of experience, so technically less time in the industry. But candidate B knows Playwright combined with TypeScript. They can build an API automation suite, they understand how to integrate it into CI/CD, and they have a fully built real-world project to prove it.
I mean, I'm hiring candidate B every single time, even though they technically have less experience.
Exactly.
They might cost more, but their output is vastly more valuable. But, you know, that raises the million-dollar question for the listener. How do you actually prove you are candidate B before you even get the interview? Like, anyone can just type CI/CD and API testing into their resume.
That's the trick, right? You prove it by building a comprehensive portfolio project. And specifically, an e-commerce automation framework.
Why e-commerce? Like, why not a banking app or a healthcare portal?
Because every hiring manager on earth understands the business logic of an e-commerce site.
Well, that's smart.
Right. You don't have to explain the domain to them. They know you need to log in, search for a product, add it to a cart, and check out. So you build a project that automates that entire UI flow.
Okay.
But you don't stop there. You also automate the back-end APIs that power that cart. You build the whole framework using TypeScript and that page object model we talked about.
Layering in all those multipliers.
Exactly. You integrate rich HTML reporting so the test results are highly visible. And then the crowning achievement. You hook the entire repository up to GitHub Actions so it runs automatically.
That is, I mean, that's a masterclass in proving your worth. You aren't just telling them you know how to build a house. You are literally handing them the blueprints, the wiring diagram, and the keys to a house you just built on your own time.
And think about how that transforms the interview process, too.
Oh,
when you sit down with a technical lead, you aren't sweating, trying to remember the answer to some obscure trivia question about Playwright syntax. You are simply explaining the engineering decisions you already made in your own project. You are having an architecture discussion, not taking a pop quiz.
Okay, so you've built this undeniable portfolio. You've proven you are candidate B. Now you were sitting at the table staring at a real offer letter.
That's the fun part.
Right. What external real world factors are going to influence that final number? Let's talk about geography. I'm looking at the data for cities like Bengaluru versus Hyderabad, and I'm wondering, does geography still limit your earning ceiling in 2026?
Well, location does still play a role, though the landscape is definitely shifting. The data shows Hyderabad ranging from 4 LPA for entry level up to 30 plus LPA for senior roles.
Okay.
Bengaluru generally runs a bit higher, starting around 5 LPA and stretching to 35 plus LPA. And Pune and Chennai remain highly competitive, mostly echoing that 40-30 LPA bracket.
But does a candidate have to move to Bengaluru to hit that top tier?
Not necessarily. Remote roles, and specifically roles at product companies, can entirely bypass these local city bans.
Okay, let's unpack this, because product versus service company is thrown around constantly. How does that business model difference actually affect the paycheck?
Sure. So service companies, your large system integrators, they offer massive scale. They have stable processes, highly structured training, and you might work across three different client projects in a single year.
Right. They're consulting out your time.
Exactly. It's a fantastic place to build a foundation. But their business model is built on billing hours. Product companies, however, are building their own proprietary software to sell to the market. A bug in their software directly impacts their bottom line.
Because it's their product on the shelf.
Exactly. Because of that, they demand much higher technical expectations and deeper engineering ownership.
And because they are demanding that ownership, they're frequently offering higher compensation, right? And sometimes equity or stock options, which can dramatically inflate your total earning potential.
That is the trade-off. But when you are evaluating these offers, you have to be incredibly careful with the terminology, particularly when it comes to CTC.
Yes. Let's do a reality check on CTC, which is cost to company, because I know people listening have felt the absolute sting of getting an offer letter that says, you know, 15 LPA CTC, doing the quick math in their head and thinking they're going to see 1.2 lakhs a month in their bank account.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get their first paycheck and think, wait, where did the rest of my money go?
It is a harsh wake-up call for a lot of engineers. CTC is not your take-home pay. CTC represents every single rupee the company spends to employ you.
Every single thing.
Yes. That includes your base salary, sure. But it also includes the house rent allowance, their contributions to your provident fund, gratuity, health insurance premiums, and crucially, the variable pay or annual bonuses.
So that 15 lakh number might include a euro lakh bonus that you only get if the company hits its yearly revenue targets. Like, it's completely conditional.
Yeah.
So how should our listeners actually evaluate an offer? When they get that piece of paper, what specific questions should they be asking?
First, you demand the exact salary breakup. You need to know your fixed base pay versus the variable component. But honestly, beyond the money, you have to interrogate the role itself during the interview.
Interrogate the role.
Yeah. You need to ask, is playwright actually being used on the team right now? Or is it just a buzzword HR put in the job description to attract talent?
Oh, that is such a dangerous trap. You get hired for a modern tech stack, you accept the offer, and on day one, you realize they want you manually clicking through a decade-old legacy system while they plan to migrate to Playwright eventually.
It happens all the time. You have to ask the hiring manager, will I own the framework? Are APIs part of my daily testing scope? Will I have access to modify the CI/CD pipeline?
Because if they say no.
Because if you take a job with a slightly higher CTC today, but it is purely manual testing or just executing someone else's automated scripts, your skill set is stagnating. A higher CTC today does not always mean a better career opportunity for tomorrow. You have to ensure the environment will let you build the skills for your next promotion.
That is incredibly practical advice. You have to look at the job as a stepping stone. Like, is this role going to give you the engineering ownership you need to hit the 25 LPA bracket in your next move?
The environment you work in dictates the skills you can naturally build. If they don't let you touch the CI/CD pipeline, you can't become an architect. It's that simple.
Bringing this all together, the core mission of this deep dive becomes very clear. The goal for you, listening right now, isn't to buy a cheap course and memorize Playwright syntax.
No.
The goal is to become a complete holistic automation engineer who just happens to use Playwright as one of their primary tools.
And that roadmap is entirely achievable if you are strategic. It's about layering your capabilities. You start with testing fundamentals. You add JavaScript or TypeScript to give yourself programming depth. You learn the Playwright framework for the UI, and then you aggressively expand into API testing, continuous integration, and cloud debugging.
Step by step.
Exactly. That combination of skills is the true, proven path from a manual tester to a highly paid architect.
It is the difference between being the person who swings the hammer and the master carpenter who designs the house.
Well said.
And that leads me to a final thought. I want to leave you with something to mull over that builds on everything we've unpacked today.
Where do you see the industry heading?
Well, the data heavily emphasizes this journey from being a scriptwriter to becoming an architect. But look at the broader tech landscape.
Yeah.
As AI and machine learning tools become increasingly capable of generating basic test scripts from natural language prompts, the value of a tech professional in 2026 and beyond is not going to be in writing the basic code.
Right. AI can already do that.
Exactly. The true value is going to be in architecting the overall quality strategy, understanding the intricate nuances of the CI/CD pipeline, and possessing deep engineering ownership.
That is a profound reality. The basic level one scripting is going to be completely commoditized by AI.
So the engineering ownership you focus on learning today isn't just a clever tactic to boost your salary. It is the ultimate way to future-proof your career. If you only know how to swing the hammer, a machine will eventually replace you.
But if you are the master carpenter,
the machine just becomes your new hammer. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep building, keep questioning, and we'll see you on the next one.